CliffCentral.com.
That's right. Collectomania returns today in its usual home on a Monday. We did one last week on Tuesday because we missed out on the Monday. But today we're going to be joined by someone who we've actually worked with, or I've worked with at CliffCentral.com, a guy called Wayne Berger, who's a collector. And he's also a technology entrepreneur. He's got some really interesting things in his collection. And in fact, at one point, I think he even gave us a whole bunch of stuff to auction off on CliffCentral.com to raise money for charity. So we'll talk to Wayne a little bit later on. We want to hear from you. You can email us, contact@cliffcentral.com. You can drop a comment in the comment section, which is always busy. And if you've never been in the comment section before, good luck. Good luck. There's some nutcases in there. I love it. All right. So many people to talk to and so many places to go and things to think about this morning. Quentin is saying, just based on what Dr. Hanan said a moment ago, if you didn't hear it, he was talking about how, you know, people, they I'm going to paraphrase him here, and I hope I don't get it wrong. I hate doing this when you try to summarize what you've heard someone say, and you know, you're not entirely sure if your definition is the same as theirs. Basically, that you certain patterns imprint on you as a child, and if you
seek familiarity,
if you seek that familiarity, even if you had a, let's say you had a really abusive or horrible childhood or inconsistent childhood that made you anxious and didn't necessarily give you a very stable sense of self, you will carry on through your adult life replicating that pattern with other people because you will seek that same familiarity, even though it was a bad familiarity. And Quentin says here, I thought this is a good point, the same is true for business. You hire one toxic person in management and they hire someone like them because they're comfortable around them, and then that grows and grows. I wonder how many businesses are just, you know, twisted and awful because of that principle that people are living with.
I mean, there are huge businesses and even banks huge construction companies. And
sure.
Then you get into the whole situation where tenders are given out to people that you're familiar with. You know?
Well, yeah, literally familiar as in family. And then, like William Keyser, and, you know, the whole family that he was giving contracts to. Anyway, I mean,
that family.
You don't need to look too far to find examples of that in South Africa. Anyway, we want to hear from you. Let us know what you're up to this morning. I'm going to get to Collectomania a little bit later on. I hear the birds chirping in your garden there, Leanne. That's nice and morning, yeah. Morning-like.
Everything's awakening. Especially, and yes, now that I've been outside, I see that there was a little bit of rain. But
you go outside for a ciggy?
I did.
You know,
yeah.
I've been thinking about the about smoking because I've obviously never been a smoker, and
starting up.
No,
smoking?
No, because I've had this throat thing. I've always, the whole of the last 2 weeks. You know, I've been sounding like shit, and. Even this morning, I'm like, when I'm not talking on the show, I'm clearing my throat the whole time. And it's probably just the result of some flu, which is not going away in a hurry. Could even have been COVID. But what bothers me about this is I'm sounding exactly like my dad who smoked his whole life, right? When I go like that, I'm like, oh my God, I sound exactly like my father.
It's the old man noises, you know?
Right. And I thought, I wonder if there's any difference really between the way I'm sounding at the moment, the way he's sounding. He smoked his whole life. Like, I think we started when he was a teenager. And here I am. And like with 2 weeks of having whatever it is, some respiratory situation, I'm like the same as him. It's just so shitty. Talk about familiarity. Talk about, you know, the pattern recognition and the pattern repeating itself. I'm like, oh God, yeah. I'm sounding like this. And then I think about it and I think, ugh, I would hate to wake up in the morning like you do. And I'm not, you know, judging you, and I don't care if you smoke or not. But I'd hate to wake up in the morning and the first thing you want is to go with a ciggy in your mouth. I mean, you, my dad, there are lots of people like, know and like in my life.
Yeah.
But I just, the idea of having a cigarette first thing in the morning is so gross to me. Ugh.
I know. But you know, even to some smokers it is. It's a thing, it's a horrible, horrible addiction. And again, just to remind you, even more addictive than heroin. So yeah, it's
absolutely
it's not great.
Let me just ask you this. Have you noticed how many people are vaping? Because I've noticed friends of mine, like one of my mates, he started vaping, but like he's got a new vape every time I see him, and he's really into it. I mean, like, this is something he's doing now. It's as consistent as smoking. If he doesn't have his vape with him, he's just as bad as a cigarette smoker. These things have spread like wildfire. You can buy them at the garage now. My sister does it too occasionally, but she's been very like consistent, and she doesn't nearly do it as much. She used to be a smoker, but she doesn't do it nearly as much as she used to when she smoked cigarettes. And for her, I think it's a huge improvement. But with this other friend of mine, he's so into it, man, and he is smoking that vape all the time.
Yeah, I think the scary part is all the different flavors and colors and shapes and things that you get, which are kind of enticing to those who haven't even started yet, especially at a younger age.
Do you think they make it a little more acceptable?
Yes, absolutely.
It's almost like a snack. It's not really like a you know, it doesn't get the same ugly treatment that cigarettes get. And I mean, cigarettes are banned pretty much everywhere now. But I know people who smoke, they vape in their cars, they vape in public transport, they vape at the office, they vape in the queue at like government departments. They vape everywhere. They don't seem to have a problem with that because you can get away with it in those places because it doesn't smell like cigarettes.
That's it. It's a lot of it's got to do with the odor and the secondhand smoke.
Have we got any? I know this is not necessarily a question you can answer, but if anyone who's listening to us in the audience has any details on this, maybe if you're a doctor, we've got doctors who listen to us. Is vaping at all better or worse by the data that we have at the moment? Obviously, it's very new, so we don't necessarily have the years and years of accumulated data that we do from smoking, you know, tobacco cigarettes. Is vaping necessarily better for you, or is it about the same? I mean, I'd really like to know whether that makes a difference too.
Yeah, it comes with another set of problems, and people, you know, you won't find that people are hospitalized early on for smoking cigarettes.
No.
But vaping is bringing on more sudden and earlier onset issues where people are ending up in hospital or even dying.
Really?
And it's the whole popcorn lung thing as well that happens. So I would say each is as dangerous as the other. I just think that it's kind of more sudden with vaping. You're seeing more young people being affected and dying, whereas smoking kind of takes its toll after years and years.
What is popcorn lung? It's so gross. Just the sound of that is just, my God.
I can't explain it medically, but when you're breathing, it's almost like you're wheezing, but you can feel the crackling. You can feel the crackling in your respiratory tract.
Does it sound almost like popcorn? Is that where it comes from?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, like little bubbles. Wow. It sounds like and feels like the bubbles being squashed out of a sponge.
Mm. Oh, that's very, very upsetting. Oh, my God. Mm. Don't like that at all.
And, people with asthma can identify as well. If you don't have your asthma pump, you can feel that sort of crunchy, crackly feeling when you breathe.
That's not nice.
No.
Have you got popcorn lung? Have you ever had it?
I have, and it's more related to my asthma than anything else. Uh-huh. But when I tried to when I was working with one pulmonologist, they wanted me to try and go off of my inhaler for a while.
Right.
And for weeks, I battled with this popcorn lung feeling until I just couldn't take it anymore and went back onto the inhaler.
Popcorn lung, won't you come and help Leanne today? Popcorn lung, won't you come? Popcorn lung. Do you like my song I wrote for you this morning?
So nice.
Listen, these are ads that they actually used to have in magazines back in the 1950s and 60s. More doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette. Camels.
We've got the doctor sitting back. He's Siggy.
He's a creepy looking doctor though, huh?
Yeah, he doesn't look healthy.
This is another good one. 20,679 physicians, and they've got a little star there. God knows what that star, that asterisk, tells you. There's a nurse on the one side of the picture for people who can't see this. You're not watching us live, you're listening. There's a half the picture is a doctor holding a packet of Lucky Strike cigarettes, and it says, 20,679 physicians say Luckies are less irritating. And then the nurse on the other side, fresh,
She's into Camel.
She's into Camel, yeah. Smoke a cigarette today. Those are actual ads. I mean, here's Ronald Reagan, who became president one day, you know, a couple of years later. My cigarette is the mild cigarette. That's why Chesterfield is my favorite. Ronald Reagan. That's Ronald Reagan in that ad. Why I smoke Chesterfield. And it's just the most incredible thing. He's got a Chesterfield in his mouth. I mean, when he became president, he wouldn't have been seen dead with a cigarette, because by then they'd become very uncool. You know?
Yeah, but again, it makes me feel so stupid as a human being. How many things are we promoting right now? It could be, you know, kale smoothies or something that end up being detrimental.
Well, I mean, that's why I asked about vapes. You know, these people, everybody's smoking a vape now. You see more of them than you see cigarettes in certain crowds. And I'm wondering if they're any better or worse.
Yeah.
Apparently, there's some people who smoke weed now, and they think that that's better, and that's probably safer for some people than cigarettes. Carl says, as a non-smoker, vape is much nicer. Doesn't stink. Can still smooch without gagging. Kissing a smoker is like gargling a dead rat.
Ew.
That's so bad. That is so bad. Jean says, morning, guys. Thanks for an intelligent start to every day of the week. Well, thank you. I hope we don't disappoint on that level.
We can disappoint on that level many times.
This is a good point being made by Ethan. He says, you get different levels of vaping. Level 5 is the highest, and that makes me cough when I vape. Level 3 or 4 is decent, because you can obviously set the amount of smoke that the thing makes, right?
It's also got to do with the power of the nicotine that you buy.
Okay, right. Vaping, you get 2 concentrations of nicotine. 12 milligrams is the strongest.
There we go.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know, but you see some of them, they make so much smoke that you could probably hotbox a car in like 3 or 4 puffs.
Yeah. In fact, this doesn't smell of anything, really.
In fact, this car pulled up in front of me at the off-ramp to the highway the other day, and then the guy or girl, because I couldn't see who it was, opened their window, and this cloud, a cloud came out of the driver's side window.
Like Cheech and Chong.
Promise you. As a smoker, vape makes your throat really dry and cough more. I prefer cigarettes. Wow. Okay. Again, I don't know, but this is really interesting. So it's just something that I've seen recently. Do you want to know some really good news? And we've got to give credit where it's due. We talked about heroes this morning. We were talking about a guy in Kalk Bay at the Brass Bell who was a barman who jumped into the water when a freak wave hit and rescued a mother and child and some other people from drowning. And that's a real hero. But here's another real hero. And this appeared on social media this morning. Humanity is moving forward. A British man has created an app that filters out all Kardashian news. Now, isn't that unbelievable? And it's a new app called hashtag CardBlock, which is K-A-R-D block, will keep all mentions of the Kardashian and Jenner clan out of the user's news feed. Isn't that great news? I want that.
I don't know if it's just my algorithms, but they don't seem to be popping up in my feeds as much as they used to.
Well, maybe
whether
people,
it's news feeds, social media feeds.
It could be that people are also just over them. I mean, I could say I was over them by week 2, but for many people, they're still an important part of their news feed. I mean, there are still, I don't know where, but there must be people all over the world who are still hugely into the Kardashians. They still have shows on TV, don't they?
I think they've come to an end, but I think maybe we're watching the last season. I'm not sure.
No, they can't be finished.
Oh,
what will they do?
Apple is saying the new season is fire.
Oh, okay. Well, there we go. So we're not paying attention. Here's something about the vaping. Vape juice is glycerine. You can make your own. Where do you buy nicotine, Steve? Because they're now having conversations in the comments section about where you buy your own stuff. It's amazing. It is mostly glycerine and something called ethylene glycol. And again, as a very poor organic chemist, I can tell you that we're probably not meant to breathe in clouds of glycerol and ethylene glycol. Just off the top of my head. Can't be great. If any of the doctors know, I'd love to hear about that, what people think of it. All right. Apparently, the Kardashians 2022 just started. So we've got a whole new season to look forward to. Great. So excited. Oh, that's awesome. And this is exactly where, who was it that was complimenting us on a smart start to their week? That's where they just tuned out. They're like, what, you're talking about the Kardashians? Are you out of your mind? Anyway. Apparently, some people saying you don't get popcorn lung from vapes. I don't know if that's true. And then you factor into that, but since we're talking about smoking, there are a lot of people who smoke hubly or shisha as well. And apparently, that is much worse than cigarettes. And I've done that a couple of times, but I can't. I've never smoked a cigarette. I wouldn't know how to. And I know from secondhand smoke inhalation, I wouldn't want to do that. But I've smoked like hubly a couple of times, and I've smoked it regularly, and it's never really been a thing to me. It's like a social thing, you know?
Yeah.
That's pretty wild. So I wonder if that's worse for you or better. I'd be very interested.
I have no idea.
And I mean, in South Africa, we mustn't even start down the smoking track if we're not going to address alcohol, right? Because we're one of the big binge drinking countries in the world.
Yeah, I think Australia still beats us.
Well, there is, I mean, look this up because it came out just the other day. There was a survey that they just did. Worst binge drinking. Hang on, I'll look this up. Countries.
Or you could say best binge drinking countries.
Would you say that? Oh, here we go. Chart the world's worst countries for binge drinking. Okay, here we go. Let's see how we do. All right. The worst countries. This is amazing. I would never have guessed. South Africa doesn't even come into the top 15. I would have thought we'd be like number 4. Maybe it's changed. All right, so here it is. This is according to the Indy 100, the independent newspaper Statista, and the World Health Organization. Okay, so seems legit.
Okay.
Let's go from number 10, France. Number 9, Moldova. Number 8, Paraguay. Bringing up the South American contingent there. Yeah, Paraguay. Mm-hmm. Belgium is at number 7. Greece at number 6. Finland, number 5. Lithuania, number 4.
Finland?
Yeah, Finland. Who would have guessed? The Czech Republic is number 3. Now, this is... Okay, so the number I'm going to give you now is the number of people... Sorry, the percentage of people who've had an episode of heavy drinking in the past 30 days. So that's for the month. All right. Lithuania, which was at number 4, 36.6% of Lithuanians had a heavy drinking episode in the last 30 days. Notice, no South Africa, the United Kingdom all the way down at 13 on this list.
Jeez.
And Mongolia
is
at 15.
So did they forget us out maybe?
Don't know.
Australia?
Let me give you the top three. So number three country. Of the world's worst countries for binge drinking, and by that they mean winning countries for binge drinking, Czech Republic is at number 3. 38.9% of people had an episode of heavy drinking in the past 30 days. Ireland is at number 2. Now, that I would have put them somewhere in there. I would have given the Irish, you know, I would have given them cred. And Austria is the number 1 country. Austrian people, 40.5%. of Austrians had an episode of heavy drinking in the past 30 days. Almost half.
Jeez.
So there we go. And by the way, heavy drinking in this survey is defined as having more than 6 units or 3 pints of lager on one occasion. So that's the latest binge drinking chart. I don't know how we could have not been on that top 15. I would have sworn South Africa would be in there.
Yeah, I don't know if I trust that chart.
Yeah, it seems like they've really
forgotten
about it. Even
though it comes from credible sources.
Maybe we just didn't have the right statistics to fit in there. I don't know. Maybe ours, according to Carl, has moved from binge drinking to just being permanently drunk.
Yes, maybe right. It's that.
Yeah, maybe
there's
we've just moved.
There's a difference between binging and drinking every single day, being drunk every day.
Don't know, but I think that that's really, really interesting. I smoke weed and do mushrooms, but I hate alcohol, says John Bad Dog Hell No. Amazing. I wonder what our rates of weed smoking in South Africa are. Wonder if they even have those statistics.
There's this article here that says binge drinking is a huge problem in South Africa, but the thing is that we can't admit it. So researchers are saying that the problem is likely to be much worse than what we're actually saying.
Okay.
And it also comes into play where economists have actually measured how much we are drinking by consumer indexes.
Maybe this survey that I just brought up now is much more recent, but I do remember us being up there. I'm pretty sure. Like Austria, Ireland, and Czech Republic are the winners here. I'm so disappointed, South Africa. I thought we had this one.
Maybe we're harder on ourselves than we should be.
What, do you think maybe we're doing better, but we just don't keep good records?
Yeah, perhaps.
It's unbelievable. 6 units is like 3 double brandies. That's like a Tuesday before 4:30 p.m. for most Afrikaans men, says Daniel Nell. Yeah, I really don't know. We don't report heavy drinking here, according to Jean. We just pass out on the street.
There you go.
Oh, my God.
And again, just having lived in a tiny town, you would go into these bottle stores where you kind of point to the bottom of the counter and they'd give you this unmarked, and it would literally be in like a 5-liter sunflower oil bottle.
No, man.
Yeah, and it looked the color of sunflower oil. It was kind of all of the bad stuff from the wine farms.
Mm-mm.
So that stuff is not being reported or collected or
are you telling me you
any data being collected.
You used to drink that?
No, man. No, not me. This is,
I'm imagining you going, the stuff under the counter, that's what I'm here for.
No.
I'm here for the good shit.
This was the type of stuff in those small farming communities.
Okay.
The people drinking that would kind of be lying down at the front of the bottle store, and you'd have to walk over them in order to go in and buy your wine.
Jesus, can you imagine? That's unreal.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Duh. Let's change the subject. This is making me very uncomfortable. I almost preferred talking about the Kardashians. I can't believe I said that, but there we are. It's done. All right. So just one quick thing. I mentioned that Leanne had some info for us about the Mzansi Meat Company, which is making South Africa's first burger patty that they're actually making in a lab. So if you don't like the idea of binge drinking or smoking vapes or smoking cigarettes, maybe this is the kind of way that you could reverse that by helping the environment recover from all your bad and stupid and destructive behavior. Would you be able to eat a patty that was grown in a lab?
Well, I mean, let's be clear here that it has been done before, obviously, but the problem has been growing enough meat to actually make a meal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this whole thing repulses me, right?
Ah,
which
me too.
Is so weird because I will eat a whole cow's worth of meat without blinking an eyelid. Is that the right phrase?
Well, I hope not. Because if you're eating the
eyelid, an eye.
If you're eating the eyelid, you've really run out of options. But yeah, if you think about how gross, let's just think about how gross the idea is. And I'm a carnivore like you. So
yeah,
I can somehow, this proves that I am also capable of huge cognitive dissonance. If you actually eat meat, like you buy a steak from the shop and then you cook it on a braai, we all like, oh, that's nice. That's what I'm going to do this weekend. I'm so excited about that. But if you imagine something grown in a lab, which is probably the good part of the meat, you know, none of the like the gristle or the little tubes or any of that shit that you pretend not to notice when you're cooking meat. You pretend to not think about the blood or the fat or any of that stuff, but it's all there on your steak that you're going to cook on the braai.
Yeah.
Somehow,
yeah. So I mean,
somehow we're disgusted by the idea of meat grown in a lab, but we're not disgusted by meat that's taken off the dead carcass of a living animal.
It's so weird.
Right?
It's so weird how I'm still kind of more comfortable with having a slice of cold meat than I am a plant-based Vienna. It's so weird. It's all in the mind. So
did I tell you? Did I tell you I was? They rumbled me the other day. I went to the shop, and I bought what I thought was like sliced cold meat with pepper in it. And I got home, and it was actually a vegan thing. It was a plant based meat thing, but it looked like cold meat.
Yeah,
it looked exactly like those loaves of kind of pepper loaf or whatever that you get. And, you know, occasionally you want a sandwich because you don't want to have to cook something and you cut open a roll, put some butter on it, put a piece of cold meat on there with a slice of tomato and some salt and pepper, and that's your lunch.
Yeah.
And
did you end up eating it?
Well, I'd only realized when I used the last piece that it was wasn't meat. I didn't, and then I was suddenly disgusted by it, which is, again, so weird. Proves how stupid I am, because I didn't realize that it wasn't meat until I'd eaten the whole packet of it. There were only about four slices or five slices in there. But I really thought while I was putting it on the roll, I was like, wow, this looks good. And it tasted nice until I found out that it wasn't meat. Then in my head, I was like, oh, someone's been tricking me. I've been tricked. I felt really stupid. I felt like I'd been completely bamboozled by the marketing. And then I read the thing and I suddenly realized, like, this has got no meat in it. How did I not see this in the shop?
It freaks us out. And it's the same as, well, I was watching some kind of program where they flash to the future.
Yeah.
And they were all sitting around in this camp. Oh, they were from the future and they'd landed in the present.
Oh, yeah.
And us kind of present beings try to help them out by giving them all burgers for dinner.
Right.
And when the kids realized that they were actually eating real cow, it freaked them out because they were so used to meat that had been grown in a lab.
Right.
So it's all trying to get your mind around it. But to grow meat in a lab takes absolutely ages. I mean, this form, Zanzi Meat Company, has taken 2 years of research and development, and only now they've been able to successfully grow enough meat to make a meal. So it starts off as this tiny biopsy taken from a cow that is then nurtured.
Oh, that sounds so gross. I'm so put off already.
How weird.
a biopsy. So this
punching a hole in the flesh.
Oh my God.
In the meantime, we're butchering animals and just tearing the meat off the bones with our teeth.
Oh my God.
So of course this meat has the kind of flavor consistency of real meat without the guilt of rearing cows. So let's see. You know, when something starts in a petri dish, it kind of puts me off a bit, you know?
Yeah. We were talking about this with Bakabantu on Thursday last week because he said, you know, he grew up in the Eastern Cape and he used to have the cow was his pet for a while. And he thought, oh, these are such wonderful animals. And then later on, whoever it was, his dad or his uncle or whatever, said, oh, sorry about your pet cow, but we're going to need to eat that this month. And he had to make the transition. Like, we would never eat our pets, right? We'd be like, oh, no, that's gross. How could you eat your pet? But we're okay with, rearing cows for food. And then we won't eat something that's grown in a lab because we think that's gross. But as you say, we'll take meat from a cow that was grown on a farm. And we're perfectly okay with that. It's normal. Don't worry about it. Don't lie to me, though.
Sarah.
Don't lie to me and tell me I'm eating meat when it's made from something else, like that cold meat that I bought last week. Or don't tell me it's lab grown. Or don't tell me that it's not lab grown when it's the opposite. I want to know what I'm dealing with so I can get my head right.
Just listen to this.
Okay.
In the Mzanzi lab, the process started out back in 2019 as five cell lines of bovine, three of them muscle and two of them fat. Oh. Just shy of 2 years later, there was enough to make their very first meat samples, which ended up being fried in a pan and turned up into a bunch of meatballs. A mix from blending 30% cultivated meat and 70% plant-based binders.
Mm-mm.
A And there's a picture of the scientist with this piece of meat on the end of a toothpick.
Oh, my God. And that's all they've managed to grow?
No, they've made a full burger patty.
I don't want it, especially if it's taken that long to grow. Ugh. So Jared says, I once accidentally served my German father a plant-based sausage and he didn't talk to me for the rest of the evening. Yeah, that's exactly right. Don't mess with people's meat, he says. That's quite right. Hermine says, yeah. And this is so true. Like, this is gross, but we don't think about it as gross. I love getting a nice femoral artery in my meat. Chewy, says Hermine. Ugh. Mm-mm. And Jen says she knows exactly what kind of brand I'm talking about, where I was fooled into buying a plant-based cold meat. Well, cold meat in inverted commas. She says, I had it in my basket until I was at the till and reading the packaging, and then I put it back on the shelf. Ha, 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 she says. Well, I didn't see that until I'd eaten the whole. I was onto the last slice when I figured out what was going on.
Yeah, like if someone had said to me, Leanne, I've made this like vegetable terrine. It's amazing. I've put in like kale and carrots and corn and then I just kind of slice it up. Then I think I'd be fine eating it.
Sure. But don't say it's a meat replacement or it's lab grown. We are so weird. This is such a disconnect in our heads. So ridiculous. Cows are actually very quiet when they're tamed. They play with balls. They come when you call them. They give hugs. Okay, Armin is trying to make us feel bad. It's not going to work. I love a steak, and a cow is still the best machine for turning grass into steak. So don't put me off. All right. It's time for Collectomania, everybody. This is brought to you by the South African Gold Coin Exchange and the Scoin Shop. And, of course, every week we manage to get someone fantastic with an unbelievable collection. This week is no different. We're going to speak to Wayne Berger in a moment or two. Wayne is someone we've worked with at Cliff Central for years, since the beginning. In fact, Wayne was the one who managed to... Wayne, you're responsible for the name cliffcentral.com. You don't even know that, do you?
No, I do know that. Okay. We shared the options we had available to you.
That's right. That's right. You gave us the URL. You said, listen, this is what I can get you guys. These are the URLs that are available. And one of them was cliffcentral.com. So when people go, oh, that Gareth's so full of himself, Cliff Central, it's all about him. He's the central thing. It actually wasn't me. It was you, Wayne. I'm going to send them your way, right?
Yeah, send them my way. I'll chat to them.
It's nice to see you, man. How are you?
You too. Yeah, thank God. All good. How are you guys doing?
Fantastic, dude. It's really, really nice to have you on the show this morning. And we're going to talk about your collection in a minute, but I'm just going to let everybody know what you actually do and how you've been working with us. You are a technology entrepreneur, and you and your business partner have been involved with helping us from a website point of view from the get-go. You've also given us plenty of really wise and sage advice along the way. So if anybody wants to know about your company, just tell us about that so that we can give you a bit of a plug at the same time.
Sure. Well, the company that works with Cliff Central is Arshak Digital Consultancy. We work more like a wholesale consultancy to digital players. You know, generally our clients are strong in the digital sphere, but in a specific realm, and we do more technical work. So, for instance, like technical app development, our CTO, he's got a master's in AI, which is artificial intelligence.
Phenomenal.
We also do the more technical online marketing, so search engine optimization. We do like AdWords, these sort of things. But
yes,
we work as a, let's say, digital transformation company with our consultancy. And we've been going for quite a while now and had some really good results. And obviously very proud of our work with Cliff Central, and proud of you guys for growing this iconic online community.
Well, Wayne, it's nice to have you on for a totally different reason this morning, but I just got to say again, we've also loved working with you, but the nicest thing about what you do is that you're one of those people who just, you start new businesses all the time, and you've got a range of different businesses that you've been involved in, not just iShack. Tell us about your collecting. Where did that start, and how did it all become, like, there's so many of us who have these passions, and everyone I meet now has some kind of collection. It might be bottle caps. It might be, expensive paintings. It might be, teacups. We had one guy on who collects statues of Liberty. So there are all kinds of weird things. How did yours start?
Yeah, so first of all, you know, people can collect weird and wonderful things. On my side, I was always a big fan of sport memorabilia. When I was growing up, I was, you know, very, very impressed with just, collectibles and generally around sport. My favorite sport was soccer or football, and very much used to be in awe of some of the memorabilia that I would see. So what happened with me is that in my honors year, I did an investment honors, and one of our courses was contemporary investments. And I was actually with a good friend of mine. We were on the way to gym, and I was complaining to him. I was saying, look, I got this contemporary investment course I've got to do a sort of project / thesis on it. I don't know what I don't like coins, I don't like art. And I was really sulking, and he said to me, well, why don't you do it on sport memorabilia? So I did a little bit of research, and the variables of sport memorabilia was very much similar to, well, the same as art and other contemporary investments. And so I started to do a little bit of research back then for my honors year, and I still am, unfortunately, an Everton fan. And at the time, there was Wayne Rooney was this teenager at Everton that just played for England, and I had a contact where I could get a shirt, so I told my parents that I'm going to buy my birthday present here. Getting Wayne Rooney signed Everton and England shirt. And I ended up sourcing it. And there's a group called MSC Sports, and they were looking for some stock. And I ended up actually selling it to them and started to sort of source items from there.
Okay,
and
so you went from pretty quickly, and I mean, this again shows that you're a lot smarter than some of us. You went quite fast from being a collector to also being someone who traded in this stuff.
Well, what really happened is at that time I was finishing my honors, and it wasn't a good time to be a white male with very average marks. And I was trying to work out, you know, what I could do next sort of thing. So I sent out my CV to a lot of places, and I got rejected everywhere. Didn't really get any.
So it was survival more than, you know, trying to see an opportunity. It was survival, right?
Yeah, well, that's it. Well, first it started off from interest and necessity, because I had to do, something for this course. And then what happened, I played quite a lot of soccer, and I was part of a team that was meant to go to Chile.
Oh, wow.
For this tournament, and we had to do some fundraising at the time. So I said a few of my teammates that weren't happy with the providers around, and they had seen sort of the stuff that I could get and had access to. So I said to them, don't worry, I'll source all the items. So I took all my bar mitzvah money, and I went and sourced all these nice collectibles. Really, at that time, they weren't, you know, it's sort of after this period, it got flooded at like charity auctions, etc. But at that time, it was very unique stuff that I was able to get.
So I just want to interrupt you for a second, because I think this is something a lot of South Africans can relate to. You know, sports memorabilia is probably one of the best collectible areas in South Africa, because I've been into many people's houses, and I'm sure you have too, Wayne, and you, Leanne, where you see at the, you know, most guys, even if their wife is extraordinarily forgiving and understanding, most guys in South Africa have one corner of the house where they have either a bar or they have their little bit of sports memorabilia up on the wall. And they've always got like a rugby jersey or a picture of the 95 World Cup where every player's signed there or something like that. I mean, I've seen it in everybody's house with very few exceptions. So this is the stuff that you're talking about now. When you managed to source this is before it became very mainstream, but this stuff still fetches good prices. And I know I've been to a number of these charity auctions, you know, after a golf game, for example, or when you go to some fancy dinner, someone is auctioning off some piece of sports memorabilia inevitably. And usually that's the thing that goes for a huge amount of money. That's what people really want. They want to say, oh, I've got that shirt that, You know, this is the original rugby jersey that Chester Williams was wearing when he kicked this conversion. Or you've got this piece of, here's a thread from Francois Pienaar's, you know, rugby jersey or whatever. Yeah. Everybody has one of these, right?
Correct. Yeah, so it's very popular, and especially when it's like topical, if it's the Rugby World Cup and there's a signed jersey or South Africa's just won the World Cup, etc. At that time, the South African memorabilia was available. There were certain companies supplying it, but there wasn't as much international stuff. So for this particular tour, I went and I took my Barmy money. I got a whole bunch of really nice and collectible stuff. And I went, and my issue back then was people used to get these jerseys and then frame them very cheaply. Mm-hmm. And then want to sell it at auction for this very expensive price. So for me, I thought, you take an apple, you shine it. I went, I sourced pictures from Getty Images, and we have a friend who's a writer, or was a writer, he's now a lawyer, but then he would write these nice articles on all the different pieces, and we'll put it on like, let's say, silver gold plates, and made them look really good. The problem is our tour got cancelled, and I had put everything into these shirts, and one morning I'd wake up and look at all these items and think, wow, this is so cool, and the next morning I'd wake up and feel sick. I thought, I've taken everything I have and, you know, put it into these shirts. And But where I was lucky, the soccer club, Beaufort Soccer Club, they needed to do a fundraiser. This was a club that I used to play for. The year after, they saw the items, loved them, put them up. They all sold for like record amounts. And while I was still searching for a job, through that event, I was able to get into another fundraiser in Cape Town, and that went really well. And at that point in time, that was the best option I had available. So So
what do we know about the market? I mean, you've had this experience, but this was a long time ago. Is South Africa still a really fertile market for sports memorabilia? Because as I said, a lot of people seem to have this stuff up in their houses, but does it really have the demand, and is there a supply that justifies it being maybe one of the biggest collectibles in the country?
Well, the thing about, first of all, especially online, 85% of what you find online is fake.
85%?
85% of what you'll find online is fake. And we'll think about it. Look, first of all, there's different levels of, let's say, memorabilia or collectibles. You can get a signed item, and then you can get worn items. It goes on supply and demand. You know, a worn jersey, especially an old worn jersey, there will be a supply of one. If it's more recent, then there's generally two per game.
Right.
But if it's just a signed signature, there's a whole bunch of ways to fake signatures. And that's actually something that I studied during my course, was just the different signatures. At that time, David Beckham was very popular. He was at Real Madrid. I focused actually on his signatures. And there's all different ways you can get a signature from a celebrity. And if it's in a signing session, you'd get a very nice signature. If it's like you see them at an airport, it should be a bit of a rough signature. And
Can you tell which ones are fake and which ones are not fake?
Well, first of all, you can't, if you're not there, you can't exactly tell for sure. But what I can tell you is that there's a good chance that this would be fake, or there's a good chance that this is real. Actually, when it comes to signatures, you have like pressure points when somebody's signing something. So even if the actual signature doesn't really look like his normal signature, but if the pressure points in the same space, that would generally be considered a genuine signature. But you can see certain things where I say, no, that's definitely fake. And just something to put out there is, if you are interested in collectibles, or if you are interested, let's say, in signed sport memorabilia, you want to buy from a reputable firm. You ideally want to know when the signing session was. You know,
right.
Usually
people have a picture there as well of where it was actually signed, and they're in it, so you can prove that they were there at the time, right?
Well, this is it. You can get that sort of providence, but generally, it doesn't, you know, playing open cards, it doesn't actually matter if it's real or not in one respect. It actually only matters if the provenance or the proofs of this particular item are really strong. Because okay. if it comes from a reputable source and everything is documented, they know when the signing session was, et cetera, or
right.
if it's like an official autograph supplier, then that will generally go much further than you getting it signed at the airport or buying it from someone who said they saw Cristiano Ronaldo at the airport
right.
and you quickly signed something.
Wayne, I just want to move on to some of the actual stuff in the collection, and some of this you may still have, some of it you may have moved on from. But what is this number 11? This is Brazil, right? What is that? What's going
on? Yeah, that's Brazil. So in 1994 World Cup, I was crazy about, well, Brazil and especially Romario. He's still probably my favorite soccer player today. And so this is an item I wouldn't want to sell. I still have it. It's just over there.
Nice.
In our passage. And this was a worn jersey. These are my most collectible items. So just for interest's sake, if they are worn, then that's very collectible because there's only a few. There's one or two per game. And
right.
this was in a warm-up game for the 1994 World Cup. Brazil won 8-2 and Romario scored a hat-trick. So
that's
it's actually
wild.
Signed in two spaces. Yeah, I mean, it's once again, if I was a little kid watching the World Cup and I saw this in my passage, I would say I made it. So
absolutely.
That's one that I'm very happy with.
Yeah. All right, here's my favorite team. This is Argentina. It looks like that is a 1986.
So that's actually 1979.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It was worn by Maradona.
Yes.
Versus Bolivia, and yeah, it's,
that's amazing.
Yeah, it's quite a.
I mean, if you never wash a worn thing, right? But if you did Maradona's, you could probably get like 8 grams of cocaine out of that. If you washed,
well, there
it,
we go.
You
so,
know?
Yeah,
you wouldn't need to use. You wouldn't need to use washing powder. Or 8 grams of powder.
Yeah.
If I just break that down and sold it, you know, in the little particles that come off, I'd get a good return. So it's quite a safe bet, that one.
All right. What about this? This is a rugby ball signed by who?
Yeah. So that's a rugby ball signed by Pinar, Stransky, and Mandela.
Oh, look at that.
94 World Cup. And the problem with this particular ball, unfortunately, and let's say if anyone is going around trying to get signatures, you know, on the ground, is that this actual ball is like evaporating. It's so old that it's like breaking into pieces. It's a little bit sad. It's quite a nice historic ball, but
yeah.
The actual quality of this Gilbert ball is literally breaking. So,
oh my God, that's terrible. So, and there's nothing you can do once that has faded and fallen apart. Then, you know, the collectability of it has diminished so far that no one will buy it, right?
Well, it loses definitely. Look, yeah, you know, different people are interested in different things and they may want it, even if it is, you know, going south, per se.
Sure.
But, if you are a collector and you do have something signed with whatever pen, try keep it out of sunlight because besides for that ball, you know, depreciating as it is, the signatures can also fade if they're in the sun.
Does that apply this is a boxing glove. Is that Mike Tyson?
That's Mike Tyson, yes.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
So this one I sold a little while ago, also from a signing session. This is just a signed item, not a used item. But, yeah, I used to either source for specific charities to help them raise funds
Amazing.
Or used to source for specific collectors that would want to, let's say, decorate a TV room or bar, et cetera. So
now, this is a lot more interesting. This is a lot more interesting to me than the than the Mike Tyson glove. This is a poster of some beautiful woman. And it's, what is this all about? And it's not signed or anything. Is this a piece of memorabilia?
Yeah, well, for me, if you pull it up on the screen, what happened there? So for me, what are really collectibles? They're memories, really.
Mm-hmm.
So World Cup Rugby 95, where were you when we won the World Cup, et cetera, the feeling, you know, where this particular piece of memorabilia. It's memorabilia for me. It's priceless. We were in Brazil around 2003, I think 2003. And we, we were traveling or backpacking, and we were between two places, Salvador and a place called Aro de Juda. We were catching a bus, and the bus was coming whenever. We never knew when. And we ended up with a few friends of ours that I was traveling with. We ended up finishing all the beers at this bus station. Then we played some soccer with some Brazilians at the bus station. And while we were there, this was the poster on the wall selling beers. I found it quite unique in Brazil. At that time, you know, a lady in a bikini holding a beer, and that's how they sold their
produce. Now, that's very sexy. So you've got that up on your wall to remind you of the actual World Cup that you went to. What's this over here, Wayne? What's going on here? This is someone swimming in where is this in the Arctic, Antarctic?
So that's in Norway. I'm sure you would know Lewis Gordon Pugh.
Of course.
So that's old Lewis. Funny enough, years ago I helped the Organ Donor Foundation raise funds. And we put up a Muhammad Ali glove. And Lewis at that time was running the Organ Donor Foundation. And after we had this really good auction, I was sitting in his office and he's telling me a story. And he says, you know, I do this cold swimming. And he starts to tell me what he does. And I thought, you know what, I've never heard more rubbish in my life. And then he said to me, well, you want to see a documentary? I was like, sure, go for it, whatever. Let's see what you got. And he then went on to show me this BBC documentary on him swimming through Norway. And
you didn't know any of this when you were speaking to him? You had no idea?
Absolutely not. I thought he was talking. I thought this is the biggest load of rubbish I've ever heard. And after the documentary, my jaw had already dropped. And we started chatting after that. And he wanted to give the King and Queen of Norway let's say, memorabilia. So he had two different kits that he wore on this particular world record swim. Mm-hmm. So the one I packaged all together. And then this kit, which had his cap, his goggles, and then his costume, I sold the others, or I put the others up for a charity to raise funds. And I kept this one, which sits in my.
But I mean, you've met, so you talk casually about being in Lewis Gordon Pugh's office, but here's you with Pele. Now, that's a memory for lifetime. I mean, this is probably the world's, certainly in the top three of the world's most legendary football players of all time. And you're in a picture with him. And I assume you've still got that shirt that he's holding there with you.
Yeah, so in 2006, Pele came through to Johannesburg, and I ended up helping the organizers with their signing sessions, and it was was a very cool experience. I was actually very impressed with Pele. He had a lot of time for everybody. He also took a lot of time signing the different items. You know, his signature is one of the most, I think him and Ali were the two most forged signatures at the time, and probably still today it's quite a basic signature. And so we hosted the signing session, and when I took this picture with him, he was like shocked with this jersey, because he says, how did I get it? It's actually a 1970 worn jersey by Pele. And why this is significant is that if you see above the badge, there's three stars, and each time a soccer team wins the World Cup, they get to put a star above the badge.
Right.
So this was the first jersey that he wore with three stars. Why this match happened was a match between Mexico and Brazil at the Maracanã, was because Brazil beat Italy in the World Cup final in Mexico, and the Mexicans all supported Brazil. And to commemorate that match and the support they got from the Mexicans, they had this game at the Maracanã. So this was the first jersey that Pele wore with three stars. So that's the sort of thing that gives these sort of collectibles.
That's so special.
You know, value.
That's
yeah,
so
it's
cool.
Just the romance around
that's
the story.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Now, what's this Sandy? This is a baseball card. We don't get a lot of these in South Africa.
Yeah, so it's quite – when I was young, I actually liked baseball and baseball cards, and I used to collect a few. And one day I got kicked out of class at school, and I went with a friend into a this like old shed at the school, and in like a corner hidden away, we found a old baseball cards. It must have been confiscated by a kid at some time, but this is from 1966.
No way.
And yeah, it's quite crazy. And so I sort of kept them, you know, with baseball cards, you need to keep them in great condition. These weren't in the greatest condition, so I've just sort of kept it away in these sort of like, what do you call them, like plastic sleeves. And Sandy Koufax specifically was a well-known guy, pitcher, and still well-known today.
Have you had this valued, Wayne?
I've sort of looked online in that there are more better structures when it comes to baseball cards and values.
I've heard
a few thousand rand.
I've heard stories about these baseball cards. Some of them can fetch you like tens of thousands of dollars if they're rare enough. And I mean, Americans, there are loads of people in the US who've been collecting these for a 100 years, or maybe a little bit less than that. So it's quite a thing. That's a whole separate collection. Listen, I'm afraid that's all we got time for this morning, but this is an incredible collection. And I don't know, I don't know that we've had anyone who does the sports collecting on. So really happy it could be you, and that you could share with us some of these absolutely incredible memories. I mean, you with Pele, you know, you with Lewis Gordon Pugh. I mean, these are really amazing things. These are great memories. So good of you to share them with us. And thank you, Wayne. Good to see you, man.
Thank you, guys. Good to see you too. And keep smiling.
Always. Yes. Thank you, Wayne. What an awesome guy. What an awesome collection. I just love this.
That's on another level. That's certainly not what you've got in your LARPA. That's covered in in Daddy Long Legs, you know?
I love it. Collectomania is brought to you by the South African Gold Coin Exchange and the Scoin Shop. You can check them out at scoinshop.com. That's coinshop with an S in the front, .com. And if you're a collector of interesting or unusual things, or you know someone who is, get in touch with us. We want to hear from you. contact@cliffcentral.com. That's how we get to hear from interesting people like Wayne. And we want to hear from you if you've got a collection too. Let us know. We're very, very keen. All right, everybody, have a happy Monday. We will see you tomorrow, bright and early at 6 a.m. Thanks, Ass. We'll see you tomorrow, and be good.
Bye.
Bye. CliffCentral.com.